morning, sir. Can you hear me okay?
Good morning. Yes, I can hear very well.
Okay. Now, we're going to get started in just one moment, and the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, he's going to chair your hearing at this time, or he will serve as the lead board member for your hearing. So the next voice you will hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and then we will also have to make a phone call. So I will turn it over to the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm pretty good.
Okay. Sir, could you please state your name, your agency number for us for the record?
Jeffrey Camper, 78259.
Okay, Mr. Camper, you're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, sir. I'm going to introduce you to the board members then. We're going to pause for a moment to make a phone call, okay?
Okay.
All right, the board members conducting the hearing today is the Honorable David Nell, our board chair, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright. My name is Michael Johnson, sir. I'll be acting as your panel lead today, okay? If you just could hold on for a moment, we need to make a phone call.
Hello, this is Donna.
Good morning. This is C.T. Wright at the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency, and we're about ready to begin the hearing. And the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will be conducting the hearing at this time. So hold one moment, and we'll be right with you. Do we have someone else we need to?
I have two victims. I gave them the Hannah yesterday, but
their
phone numbers are right there by the arrow.
Okay. We need to tie some others in, Ms. Ham, so if you can just hold on. And so we'll get back to you very shortly, ma'am.
Thank you.
Two other connections that we have to make, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, just hold on. Ms. Ralph, this is the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I understand that you wanted to be on the hearing for Mr. Jeffrey Camper. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. If you would just hold on a minute, please. There's one other call that we need to make and make the connection. So please just hold on to the line, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Understand that you wanted to be on the hearing for Mr. Jeffrey Campers this morning?
Yes, I do.
Okay. If you would just hold on, I want to make sure there's a couple of other people that we have on the line. I want to make sure we have everybody on the line, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right. Ms. Hamm, are you on the line?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Carl Routh, are you on the line?
Yes, sir.
Ms. Candace Routh, are you on the line?
Yes.
Okay, at this point, Honorable Mr. Johnson will conduct the hearing.
Can everyone hear me clearly that's on the line?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and start the hearing. I do want to acknowledge that we do also have some people that's in the hearing room today. You have Ms. Sharon Miller, Monty Miller. Are you okay? Then you have Ms. Looks like Joanna Camper, Mr. Matthew, is it Ellis? Elias, from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. We also have a David Koshman. And you also have a Ms. Jackie Vandeman.
Yes.
All of you wishing to speak here, I do have Ms. Miller down marked to speak, Mr. Miller marked to speak, and representative from the county attorney, Mr. Ellis, down to speak. Is anyone else here that's planning on speaking? Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Camper?
Yes.
Sir, I'm going to go over some information with you. If any of the information that I go over is incorrect, you can please correct me. I'm going off the information that we have here in the file that we have here with us today, okay?
Okay.
All right. So you are here before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. You are here for a absolute discharge of parole to your next consecutive sentence. Is that also your understanding, sir?
Actually, I thought I understood that, but apparently I don't. Can you explain how that works?
Okay, so you are here for a hearing for an absolute discharge or parole to your next consecutive sentence. You are currently in custody and serving a life sentence, and you became parole eligible on that sentence on January 29th of 2014. If you are paroled to your next consecutive sentence, you will be paroled to an 8-year sentence for arson of a structured property.
Okay, but does that mean that I go, when those other two sentences are finished, does this mean that I go to the parole board again, or?
That means, sir, that.
I'm done with that.
Sir, no, it doesn't. It means that after you go to this 8-year sentence, then you'll come back before this board to go to a 1-year, 6-month sentence for escape second degree. And then when you finish that sentence, you revert back to the life sentence. Then you come before this board to get home arrest, regular parole, or absolute discharge.
Okay, that's what I didn't understand.
Okay, do you kind of have an understanding now, sir?
Yeah, I got it now.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
No problem. Sir, according to your institutional progress report, it says that you don't have any specific release address at the time. However, you do not have any employment at the time, and that you plan to, your family will help you with your expenses, along with family and friends, that you're interested in doing some type of abuse counseling. Is that right? Substance abuse counseling.
Well, that's correct, except for I'm not going anywhere, so DOC is my address.
Okay.
If I were going to the street, I would definitely have an address and employment.
Okay. All right, sir. So I see that on your programming that you have taken some programming, but I also see that you have attached several certificates, some programming, and some college that you've actually ascertained since you've been incarcerated, sir?
That's correct, but I just received a copy of that parole packet on Thursday.
Yes.
If you got the same one that I got, it is not complete. I apologize for that. I actually have an AA degree. I have a certificate in building maintenance, a certificate in computer repair, and a few other things. All I can tell you is next time it will be complete.
Okay.
I didn't have, once I found out that it was missing some stuff, I didn't have time to respond.
Okay, I'm going to just make a little note so I can.
You have an AA degree,
so he said, and then you have a certificate for a couple of things.
Building maintenance and computer repair, small business management also.
All right. All right, sir. So according to this institutional progress report that I'm looking at right now at the time, you have had a minor violation for a conspiracy to looks like some type of dismissal. You also had one in 2016, July of 2016 for obstructing, which was dismissed. But you have one that was on March 23rd of 2017 for possession of drug paraphernalia, and that was a major. He was found guilty of it. According to the information that I'm looking at, it says that unloaded prison made syringe was found on the floor of your living space back on February 28th of 2017. At approximately 8 o'clock in the morning, sir. Is that right, or can you tell me a little bit about that?
It was found about 6 inches from my bunk, apparently. I was not in the building. They were, TSU came in, which is basically DLC's SWAT team, and everybody threw their contraband out on the chair. Technically, no one should have been written up for that, but the staff was overheard arguing about whether they were going to write somebody up, and they decided to write up the closest bunk to it. And given I had a track record for something like that, when I went to disciplinary, they wouldn't even accept my witness statements. So I ended up eating that ticket, basically.
Okay, so how many people were in that space, living space?
32.
There was 32 people in the same living space?
Yes.
Okay, and it said that it was in your living space. So you're saying that they came in and actually were going to do search the space, and they found this syringe about, would you say, so many inches from your bed?
Yes.
Okay. Did they confiscate any other things in there during that period of time, sir?
No, as a matter of fact, I found other things that didn't belong to me in my space that had been left there from other cubicles, so.
So, you do have a history of, since you've been in there, of being involved in drugs. Are you still doing drugs, or are you drug-free at this time, sir?
I'm drug free at this time.
And how long have you been drug free, sir?
8 months to a year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, sir, I see that you have appeared before this board on four separate occasions. February of 14, October of 14, December of 15, and August of 17. Each time you appeared before this board during those times, you were actually denied at that time. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, this is a incident that occurred back in January 28th of 1999 when you went to the home of Mr. Ralph apartment in order to collect some money for an outstanding debt. While at that location, Mr. Ralph reportedly brandished a small caliber rifle and pointed it toward you. You two began to struggle, during which time Mr. Ralph brandished a knife. The struggle continued, and Mr. Campbell heard a pop. Mr. Ralph fell to the floor and was bleeding from the back of his head. You cleaned up the apartment. You put Mr. Ralph's body into the back of his pickup truck, transported it to a gas station where you poured gasoline in the bed of the truck, and proceeded to the desert where you charged the truck. At that time, is that about right, or what occurred, sir?
Yes.
So, Mr. Campbell, why don't you tell me in your own words what was going on during that period of time when this incident occurred? Why did you go over there? What type of debt were you going to collect?
It was $125 for a stereo that I sold in 3 or 4 weeks prior. I know this is painful for his family to hear and mine, so I apologize to them for having to hear it again. I know that the crime involves a series of events, and I ain't proud of what happened, but when I went there, there was other people in the apartment that asked me to stay. They had to leave, so they asked me to stay and wake him up at about 4 o'clock. So I did that, and he was pretty agitated. I told him that I needed the $125. He eventually gave it to me, but he gave me $100, and then he gave me $25 as a quarter gram of meth, and he stopped off upstairs, and he came back down carrying a rifle. He was playing with it, and I seen him put a bullet in there, and at some point, he decided that he wanted back the $100 that he gave me because he said he had another transaction for another rifle or another gun. I'm not sure whether it was a handgun or a rifle, but he had another gun he wanted to buy, and he said that money that he paid me was going to make him short, so he wanted it back. Now, in his defense, he was under the influence of drugs just as well as I was. So the behavior was not, it was a little erratic. And he pointed that rifle just below my right eye. And I asked him to remove it a couple of times and got nowhere. He didn't, he maintained, pointed at me. Eventually, I reached up and grabbed the barrel of the rifle, and he wouldn't let go. There was a hammer sitting on the floor right by my left foot. I'd been sitting there twirling it by the handle earlier, and when I grabbed the front end of the, excuse me, there's radio going off. When I grabbed the front end of the rifle and he didn't let go, I grabbed the hammer and I swung it and hit him in the side of the head. But as I pulled on the rifle, it pulled him closer to me. So I overswung, and that's why the hammer caught him behind the ear. He spun around and fell down on his knees and then fell onto the couch. There was another handgun on the couch. I think it was a 9mm. I didn't realize at the time how hard I hit him. I thought he was dragging that pistol back around because his palm came down on the pistol, and his arm started dragging it back around toward me. I thought that he was dragging it back around to shoot me, so I started yelling, don't do it. I don't know if I got it all out or not, but I dropped the hammer and I swung the other end of the rifle around and caught it with my left hand. And almost as soon as I caught the rifle with my left hand, it went off and I heard a pop. And that's when I realized I shot him. I immediately grabbed his ankles and pulled him flat on the floor and turned him over like if you were gonna treat somebody for shock. I went to the bathroom, I got a towel, I put it on the injury, and I used a cargo strap that was laying on the floor to tie down his head. I rolled his head to the side so that he could breathe, and blood came out of his mouth, and all you could hear was air exiting his body, and that was it. He was pretty much done.
Okay.
I checked for pulse, there was none. At that point, I panicked, and I cleaned up the apartment. I threw him and the trash bags that were in there in the back of the truck, and I drove out to what I thought was a deserted desert area, and I burned it all. And I hitchhiked back to town after that. Again, those decisions weren't right. I realized they weren't, I wasn't thinking straight. And it's taken a lot of years to come to terms with it.
So, after you went in town, so since you've been incarcerated, so I see that you've done a lot of programs since you've been incarcerated. So, and, you know, according to what you're telling us, that you have an AA degree and a certificate for building maintenance, a certificate for computer repair, and a certificate for small business management that we don't have included in the file that we have here today. But sir, can you tell me, you said you've been off drugs for about a year?
Yes.
Okay. So tell me, how did you do that? What did you do to get off drugs?
I went cold turkey. It was not nice. It's especially difficult when it's all around you and you can't get away from it.
So when you went cold turkey, because I am concerned about this one allegation that occurred in 2017, the syringe, what type of drugs were you using, sir?
Heroin.
Okay. And the type of syringe that was found in your living space, is that the type of syringe that would be used for heroin, sir?
Well, yeah, it would have been, I suppose, but I was inhaling it, I wasn't injecting it.
Okay, so at the time that syringe was found, were you still doing drugs? You said you'd been off about a year, so was it before or after that you stopped?
It was after that, but it wasn't like I did it every day. It was basically as I needed it.
Uh-huh. And what type of drug were you on? You say that you went to the victim's home and this incident occurred.
That was meth. I haven't touched that stuff since I came to prison.
Okay. But you were high on meth at the time that the incident occurred?
Yes.
All right. All right, sir. I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you. Since the board has no additional questions, I'm going to go to the victims. But I do want to make note of, I said earlier that Mr. Camper has several certificates and programming that he's done since he's been incarcerated. I also want to say that there are numerous letters in the file from victims, family, and friends, along with the county attorney's office letter that is our in objection to Mr. Campbell being paroled to his next consecutive sentence or given an absolute discharge. I am going to go. Ms. Ham?
Yes, sir.
Okay, did you want to speak first or did you want the victim's family to speak first?
Okay. Thank
I'm sorry, did you want to speak first or do you want Mr. Campbell's family to speak first?
If you don't mind, I'd like to let their family speak first. Let Jeff's family speak first.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to let to the family and whichever order that you want to come up and speak, please come up to the podium here. Just state your full name and then present the information that you'd like to present before the board.
For Jeff.
Yes, ma'am. For Jeff.
You'll have to forgive me, I wasn't able to print this. Jeff moved to Arizona.
Excuse me. Well, we need you to state your full name.
I'm Jackie Vandalin.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Vandalin.
Jeff moved to Arizona from Iowa in the late 80s looking for employment and a better life. It was a down economy back then and he was having a hard time finding employment, so he moved himself across the country. He was always a very hardworking person. Things were slow going at first, but he soon settled into a new position at AutoZone, which was good for him because he had worked in that industry before and had an interest in mechanics. He stayed with me and my mother until he was able to obtain his own place. We hadn't spent a lot of time together during our lives living together, but we became close very quickly. It was nice to have my big brother around. We always talked about making our lives better and the things that we were going to do. We talked about buying houses and many other ventures that we would pursue in the future. I know that it's hard for people to know Jeff the way that I know him. Almost impossible in this time.
That's all right, take your time.
Almost impossible under these circumstances. He is a kind-hearted individual, and he was always fun-loving and full of life. He was the kind of guy who picked up stray dogs off the street. He stuck by his friends, and he always stood by them. During the same era, he also made friends with people that would unfortunately lead to this regrettable incident. He was introduced to Dave Roth through mutual friends, and everything went downhill from there. And he started dealing and doing drugs, which was way out of his character because he had never done anything like that before. And it was my understanding that a lot of the drugs came from Dave's own father. And the drugs were powerful and caused these guys to act in ways that weren't themselves. Crystal meth is known for causing paranoia, a little bit irritability, depression, everything negative, there's nothing good that came from it. These guys would stay up for days on these drugs and it would take them to horrible places. They all carried guns along with the drugs that made for a horrible combination. I knew it wouldn't be long before something would happen, but I had no idea it would be us living this nightmare. On Saturday, January 28th in the early afternoon, I got a phone call from my brother and he asked me to come over. But I couldn't because I was doing laundry that day. Just before this incident happened, Jeff had expressed to me that he wanted to stop doing the drugs. I was extremely happy because I was trying to work up the courage myself to talk to him about his problem. And it was too late. I just wish I had been there for him on that day. Unfortunately, a very long time ago, Jeff's actions caused the death of David Roth. For this, I know he is truly sorry. And he has spent the last 30 years. He walked up for his crime and has had a long time to think about the events that led to his incarceration. I know that if he could have changed the outcome that day, he certainly would have. And Jeff has always worked toward the day that one day he may regain his freedom. And he has used this time to better himself whenever possible. He has earned multiple certificates and attained an associate's arts degree, and even accomplished things he never thought that he could. He has maintained employment for most of the time that he has been incarcerated. He has managed to do these things in harsh, unforgiving environment where his last finger has been mentally broken down, stabbed, and as of late, endured multiple vicious attacks. This has been a long journey for our family, and we have stood by Jeff through all of it. He realizes that his action cost him a lot. Family members have passed, and he was unable to say goodbye. If he could have changed that event, then we would have that one second. You know that he would. You know that Dave's mother is angry and heartbroken, that goes without saying. She's tried to tie me to this, and I just have to say that I didn't have anything to do with this. Well, unfortunately, we cannot change the past or rewrite our lives. We can only move forward. And I feel like Jeff has given many years of his life that paying his debt to society. I feel like he deserves to try and make a life for himself free from prison walls. I know that he will succeed in life because he is a good person. He has reliable and stable support necessary to make it on the outside again. And please know from the bottom of my heart, I appreciate the consideration of Jeff's parole to his next sentence. I feel he deserves to make a semblance of the life that he has remaining, and I know he will do good things with it. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Vandalin, let me see if the board has any additional questions. Send no questions coming before the board. Thank you. Who wants to come up next? Is there anyone else that want to speak on behalf of Mr. Camper that want to come up and speak?
Do we have to do it now?
Yes, sir.
We can't go after it, listen.
No, sir.
I don't really know what I can say to change the situation. As a rational body...
Sorry, I need to state your full name.
David Koshman.
Okay, Mr.
As a rational body who's making a decision, there are really no winners here today. The family of the victim, the family of the defendant, they have both suffered. This situation could have easily been reversed while the family of the defendant been the family of the victim, and they would have been family of the defendant. Unfortunately, when you get involved in drugs at a young age, and that's very common in our society, people make irrational decisions, and then rational people such as yourself are put in a position to try to justify an irrational act. Nothing justifies taking a life for drugs, for money. And I think everyone can agree that this would not have happened if both parties were not involved in illegal activity. This could have easily turned out to be a manslaughter case had the subsequent events of taking a body out to the desert, one irrational act has caused sequence of other irrational acts. But there was no criminal intent. He didn't go in there with the intent to kill the victim. It just happened in the course of illegal activities that none of you, and I'm sure the family of the victim or the family of the defendant, would support. So you would have to put yourself in a position to make a rational decision when everyone in this courtroom and everyone in this room is very emotional. I hope you make the right decision. I think he has paid for his crime. He can never bring a life back. If he had not been involved in drugs, none of this would have happened. neither party was an angel here. Neither party was totally innocent. When you put yourself in that position, these are the consequences of those events and those decisions. And all I ask is you don't let your emotions override your rational mind. That's all I ask.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Cosmo. Let me see if the board has any additional questions. Since the board has no additional questions, is there anyone else that would like to speak on behalf of Mr. Jeffrey Camper? Okay, if there's no one else that wishes to speak on behalf of Mr. Camper, I am going to go to Ms. Ham, who is on the telephone. Ms. Ham?
Yes.
Okay, could you go ahead and just state your full name and present the information that you'd like to present to the board?
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. My name is Donna Ham, for the record, and I am very familiar with the facts and circumstances of Jeff's case. I've been involved in some other parole hearings that he has had in the past, and I've had the opportunity to read his file, including the trial transcript, the pretrial motions, and of course to review his prison record and so on. The previous speakers, Jackie and the gentleman who just spoke, I think successfully expressed the viewpoint that Jeff is not a perfect person, nor was David, his victim, and they were both drug dealers. That's, I think, undeniable. And drug deals and drug culture are inherently dangerous. And I think the point that this potentially could have been exactly the opposite had things gone a little differently, and we could have been having the Camper family as the victim and the Roth family as the defendant in this matter. Jeff has taken his prison sentence seriously, and I think that's evident in the kinds of programs that he's completed and engaged in. Has he had a perfect prison record? No. But the opportunity for parole to a consecutive sentence, in this case to two consecutive sentences, is not a risk in any way to the community. And it's in the best interest of the state of Arizona, which is what the statute mandates for parole to a consecutive sentence, because it provides hope to someone who still, after completion of any consecutive sentences, is required to come back before the board still on his life sentence and then successfully obtain a parole to the community. So there's a long stretch, there's a lot of steps between this step today and the actual freedom in the community. And if Jeff has hope, if he knows that the officials in government are willing to recognize that people can change, they do change, they can make a life for themselves that's positive and constructive, and if he has hope that that is something that this board recognizes in him, then I really believe that he will be able to demonstrate over the next decade, roughly the 8-year sentence and the 1.5-year sentence, he will be able to demonstrate that he is then ready to appear for a 412A parole hearing, which would be a parole hearing making him eligible to be released to the community. It's, again, Jeff is a person who, like many people, he takes a couple steps forward and then he'll take a step back. but he is steadily moving forward, and he has a lot of insights that he's gained. He has a lot of support. Even though the department progress report indicated that he had no release plan, his parole packet does indicate that he does have a release plan, including a job and a place to live. And so everything is in place except the mechanism to give him hope and promise that his sentence, which called for a minimum sentence of 25 to life, allows him to be moving forward and considered someone who is making progress. And that's all we're asking today. We're not asking for you to put your faith and trust in a release to the community. We're asking for you to move him forward to his next 8-year sentence.
Okay, well, thank you, Ms. Hamm. I'm going to see if the board has any questions for you. Not seeing any questions coming from the board, I am going to go to the Maricopa County Attorney representing Mr. Allies, and see, do you want to speak, sir, or would you like for the family to come up and speak, or do you guys have an order that you'd like to speak?
Let the families speak.
Okay, so I'm going to let you choose which person comes up first to speak, but when you come up to the podium, if you would please say your full name, and then present your information to the board.
Mr. Johnson, I believe the individuals on the phone would actually like to address the board first.
Okay, then we'll go in that order first. I think the first person that we contacted on the phone was Ms. Carl Routh. Ms. Routh, Ms. Carl Routh. Do you want to go ahead and state your full name and present your information to the board at this time?
Yes, Carol Roth is my name.
Okay.
So when this situation happened, Mr. Tamper had several opportunities to stop. He basically had a choice, right? He had a choice to stop. He could have left the apartment. He could have called the police. He could have taken the truck to the hospital, but he chose to drive it to a gas station and then to start it on fire. Those were all choices. I was very young when my brother was murdered, but what I remember was that he was a very good person. He had a great smile and he loved to laugh. He liked to laugh and always enjoyed playing and being around him. There are memories and things that my children will never get to experience because my brother was taken from us. The memories of laughing with him and playing with him, my children will never get to have those. Why should Mr. Kemper be able to enjoy any of the things that life has to offer? Why should he get to be around his family? Why should he be able to experience anything in life that my brother does not get to experience? He will never get to enjoy being around his family again. He will never be able to meet his nieces and nephews. Mr. Kemper can still talk to his family. He can still have conversations with them. Life is filled with choices. And to me, it doesn't sound like the choices that he has made in life so far are very good. He's had choices and opportunities to change, but yet he's still being caught with drugs in prison. He says he's clean. He did this, I was there in 2016, he said he was clean again, and then after that he was caught with drugs again. I'm asking for the board to extend because I don't feel that he has made the right choices so far for his prison sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Roth. Let me see if the board has any questions. Not seeing any questions coming from the board. I am going to go to Ms. Candace Routh at this time, and if you would just please state your full name and present your information to the board.
My name is Candace Routh. I was only 4 years old when my brother was murdered. I never got to really get to know him because I was so young, but I was able to see the change and the impact that it caused to my family and especially to my father. What this man did changed the course of all of our lives. He should not be able to return to his family and have his freedom returned to him. He took a life, so he deserves to stay in prison for life. Mr. Kemper has never shown remorse, and any regret that he has shown is only because he wants to be free. Yes, this situation could have been reversed. What actually did happen is my brother is dead, and Mr. Kemper gets to speak with his family and will potentially see them someday again. None of us will get to speak or see my brother or hug him or have our children get to know him. Mr. Kemper took that away from us. Mr. Kemper has not changed. He continues to use drugs over 30 years. He has only had 1 year or less of being drug-free. My brother's life has been taken, and he has done nothing to show that he deserves to be released. He seems to be the same person that took my brother's life. And I'm asking the board to extend.
Chris, we have a technical problem.
Oh, okay.
So can
we lost Mr. Kemper, so we're kind of a little technical. Could you, Miss Candace Ralph?
Yes.
Could you just hold on for a moment? We are having some technical difficulties, and we have lost Mr. Kemper on our video screen. We're trying to go back to him, okay?
Okay.
System and see if we can get them.
Okay, can you hear us now, sir?
You're talking to me?
Yes, sir. Can you hear us? Yes. We had some technical issues, so you're back. Okay, sir. Your hearing will continue.
Okay, Mr. Campbell, for a few minutes, we seem to have lost contact with you, so we stopped the hearing while Ms. Candace Ralph was in the process of making a presentation to the board. We're going to pick up where Ms. Candace Ralph was making her presentation. Ms. Ralph, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, we do have Mr. Campbell back on the video screen and online now. If you can go ahead and finish with your presentation, please do us a favor and state your full name and go ahead and continue.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you. My name is Candace Ralph. I was only 4 years old when my brother was murdered. I never got to really get to know him because I was so young, but I was able to see the change and the impact that it caused to my family and especially to my dad. What this man did changed the course of all of our lives. He should not be allowed to return to his family and his freedom returned to him. He took a life, but he deserves to stay in prison for life. Mr. Kemper has never shown remorse. and any regret that he has shown is only because he wants to be free. Yes, this situation could have been reversed, but what actually did happen is my brother is dead, and Mr. Camper gets to speak with his family and will potentially get to see them someday. None of us will get to speak or see my brother, hug him, or have our children get to know him. Mr. Camper took that away from us. Mr. Camper has not changed. He continues to use drugs. Over 30 years he has had, and he has only had 1 year or less of being drug-free. My brother's life has been taken, no matter what. That's what happened. And I'm asking the board to please continue his sentence. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Does the board have any questions? Some more additional questions coming from the board. Who would like to be next to speak on behalf of the victim?
My name is Sharon Dickinson Miller, and I am David's mother. I'd like to thank you for allowing me to speak each year before you to try to keep Jeffrey Camper where he belongs, in my opinion. I believe all of you were on the board last year at the hearing last year. I just want to make sure that you still have the pictures of my son in the file.
Yes,
ma'am. Before and after pictures, okay. I looked over some of the things that Ms. Young had entered, and some of the victim's statements were a little bit wrong. I think we went over some of the things that he did have an offense in 17, which some of the victims didn't remember, I guess. Some of the other things that I wanted to go over. Every time Mr. Camper talks, he tells a different story. I don't know how many stories each of you have heard, but it's a little different this time, too. I believe in what you read in the beginning. He talks about David put a gun to him, and then David grabbed a knife, and all of this stuff. Well, Mr. Camper didn't mention the knife this time, but in the picture, you can clearly see a cut on my son's face, and a knife was found in the truck. So Mr. Camper omitted that. He also omitted in his original statement the sledgehammer. So as far as I'm concerned, I don't know that anything that he tells us is the truth, because every time it's different. I've never had the cut on my son's face explained. There is a gunshot wound to the back of his head, which, if you're fighting over a gun, you're not going to get. But I think today Mr. Camper changed that story and said after he hit David with the sledgehammer, he fell, and that's when he shot him. He mentioned putting a towel over my son's head for first aid. There was a massive amount of blood. My son did not die quickly. There was blood on the couch. There was blood on the floor. It had soaked through the carpet. It had soaked through the pad. It had soaked through to the subfloor, a large spot of blood. The towel on his head was blood-soaked. As you can see in the pictures, his hair was still intact because of all the blood. There was blood when he carried my son's body downstairs into his truck, on the walls in the living room, and there was blood on the wall going down the stairs. So there is no way to tell when my son did die. But because of the fact that there was so much blood, I do not believe he died quickly. Mr. Camper has had 32 disciplinary actions since being incarcerated. One of those was escape, and he told us, I believe a year or two ago, that the escape was because the DOC had taken away the law library and he had no way to get out, so he had his only recourse was to escape. Everything is somebody else's fault. Everything is an excuse. Mr. Camper's custody level has remained a 3 or a 4, the whole time he's been incarcerated. At one point after the escape, it was a 5. So it's not getting any better as far as what they rank him in the facility as far as the custody level. As far as the classes that he has taken and the education that he has received, all of these are very good. They're good things for him to do. The only issue that I have with all of this, well, there's two. One, he's continuing to get major violations while he's taking these things to improve, supposedly. And the other thing is, as far as his work goes, it looked like for a while, I'm assuming after he got maybe his college degree, he was an education aide. And then for the past quite a number of years, he has just had lesser jobs, kitchen aide, groundskeeper, things like this, which I think is, I feel his education would be better used for the state and everyone if he were working in that type of job in the facility, which he's not. For the past few 2 years, he has had no job. Looking at the inmate data search on the internet, shows nothing since 2016. It's my understanding that Mr. Camper has been in protective custody for 2 years. And he had stated on that before that he preferred it in protective custody because he didn't, if he went out in general pop, then it's more likely, you know, that someone would get him in trouble or something. He prefers to stay in protective custody. How can you go out into society and function if you can't even function in a correctional facility? If you have to be shielded from everything. This is not, my son's murder was not a simple murder. It was not a thing where it was a drive-by, it was not shooting him from a number of feet away. Everything that he did was very close and personal. The knife cut on my son's face, had Mr. Camper did do that, or I'm not even aware of it, he would have felt that knife go into my son's skin and he would have seen the blood. When he bludgeoned him with a sledgehammer, he would have felt that crack my son's skull and probably heard it and seen the blood. With the gun, he could not have been that far away. I don't think he was right on top of him, but he was close enough that he would feel the recoil from the gun when he shot my son. He would see that bullet wound. He would see the blood. When he put the towel on my son's head, he must have gotten blood all over himself, too, because of the way my son was bleeding. He had to pick my son up, carry him across the room, carry him down the stairs, and put him in the bed of his pickup truck. How much closer or more personal can you get than carrying someone that you have done all this to? And supposedly, all of this was because of $150 debt or $125 debt. No person does something like that for such a small amount of money. No person, a normal person doesn't do it for any reason. Oh God, he could have stopped after the cut. He could have stopped after the sledgehammer. He could have stopped after the shotgun. He could have stopped before he carried him down the stairs. He could have stopped before he put gasoline on his body. And he could have stopped before he took him 20 miles in the desert and set him on fire. When he set my son on fire, he would have smelled his burning flesh. And he had my son been conscious to any of this, he would have heard my son's cries for pain and for help. Mr. Gamberg testified 2 years ago that these parole hearings were really hard for him and that he couldn't sleep for a week before the parole hearing. I have not slept peacefully since January 28th, 1989. Why has Kara testified because David was murdered while we were having her birthday party? So So every year on her birthday is the anniversary of her brother's death. All of our family, Karen and Candace, live quite a ways away from Phoenix. So it's very, very hard, both financially and emotionally, for us to come to the hearings every year. I start doing court orders weeks before. And I will never stop coming to these. I will keep coming. I'm going to keep Jeffrey Camarena. I don't ever want that man paroled ever from the murder charge. My son is gone. My son will never be paroled from his death sentence. And Mr. Camper should never be paroled either. If I should die before he gets out of prison, my youngest daughter will take over for me. She was 9 months old when David was murdered. She meant so much to him. He was in the delivery room with me until months before she was born. And she forgot to know her brother. The only other thing is that in his release plans, he plans to live with Jackie. I've mentioned this before. It is my understanding that she assisted him transporting my son's body. If nothing else, she lied to the police to provide an alibi for him before he confessed. Their plan was that he had a flat tire and she went to get him, and so they were busy doing this and he couldn't have been there and done that. So at the least, she lied to the police. During the trial, she refused to testify. So she was incarcerated for 5 days for contempt of court. And I feel confident that she went out to the desert with him. Mr. Camper states that he hitchhiked back. That is a very deserted area out there, at least it was in 1989. Looking at all the blood from my son's pictures, and the apartment, Mr. Camper would have been covered in blood. I cannot imagine someone picking him up, hitchhiking out in the middle of the desert, covered in blood. So the only thing that I request is that you do not parole him, particularly today and never. And I also request that you do not put him up for parole again for a year because of the fact that it is so difficult for all the family to get to Phoenix every year. But it doesn't mean what I'll spend my last payday to be out here in front of this board. But please make it a year before he come up for parole again. Thank you.
Does the board have any questions?
Yes.
Mr. Neal.
Yes, ma'am. This is, I know it's sensitive, we have tough questions, we have tough decisions, but do you understand the process within here that if we were to parole him to
the consecutive sentences.
Well, okay.
Yes. And then after those, then go back to the original.
Okay, but what I was getting at is that for the next consecutive sentence is also beneficial to you as a victim, because it'll be at least 4, maybe 5 or 6, I don't know when he would be eligible for parole on that 8 years, but if we were to grant him parole to make a consecutive sentence, then you wouldn't have to tear up your life again for that at least 4 or 5 years, rather than every year when it comes around.
I would rather you kept him and did not parole him on the murder.
Okay. And
I would rather go through it. I don't want him paroled from the murder.
Okay, and that's very common.
It's a life sentence.
Okay.
It has not been his life.
All right, but, okay, you know, and I'm not trying to put salt in the wounds or anything else like that. I work with an advocacy center for victims, and I am a victim and all that. Most victims don't understand that process. And believe me, when I started this job on the probate board, I didn't understand it either. And so, you know, sometimes it is very beneficial to not only, you know, the inmate to give them hope, which is, you know, one of the things we have to, compassionate things we have to look at, but it's also beneficial to you as a victim because we understand that this is very difficult for you to appear here and you know, bring up the past every time you have to come in, and you know, but
yes, it's something that I do for my son.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. I understand that. Every victim is different, and every victim grieves differently, and I'm not trying to shove anything down your throat. I just want to make sure you understand that, because it's obvious that you're, you know, quite emotional today about it, and you know, I mean, it would be a relief for you, but if that's your wish, then we'll just, you know, do it the way we want to do it. Okay.
No.
All right, thank you.
I will come back every year, and as I've said, if I can't come back anymore, my daughter will, my youngest daughter.
Thank you.
Thank you. No more questions. Thank you, Ms. Miller.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. My name is Matthew E. Linus. I'm a deputy county attorney with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. A lot of the speakers that have addressed the board this morning have talked about how this situation could have been different, how the roles could have been reversed. But that hypothetical is not in front of the board today. And I think that hypothetical is completely irrelevant to considering what actually happened in this case. We aren't dealing with the roles being reversed. We're dealing with a situation where Mr. Camper murdered David Brooklyn. In his statement, Mr. Camper still, after all this time, minimized his culpability. He still talked about this murder as though it was some sort of accident or even some type of imperfect self-defense by talking about how Mr. Roth had the gun first. What I think is important for the board to consider is Mr. Camper's subsequent actions after killing Mr. Roth are not consistent with this being an accident or being imperfect self-defense. Additionally, this case was tried to a jury. All the facts and circumstances of Mr. Roth's death were presented to a jury of 12 people who unanimously found Mr. Camper guilty of first-degree murder. Not of an accident, not of self-defense, but that jury convicted Mr. Camper of first-degree murder. And at this point in the proceedings, we should not be relitigating what actually happened in trying to minimize Mr. Camper's culpability, because he was convicted by a jury at the time of the shortly after the time of the offense, of first-degree murder. Mr. Camper's been incarcerated for approximately 29 years, somewhere in that range. He mentioned earlier when he addressed the board that he was using drugs at the time. His disciplinary infractions and his subsequent statements during his testimony to the board today were that he's been continuing to use drugs for that 28 to 30 year period that he's been incarcerated. He has numerous disciplinary infractions. Additionally, his discipline includes an actual escape from prison. These are all considerations that the board should consider when determining whether or not this is an individual who's a good candidate for parole or absolute discharge or parole to the next sentence. And when considering whether or not somebody should be paroled to their next sentence, the question that should be, the board should consider is, has this person earned that right to be paroled to their next sentence? Looking at Mr. Camper's continued drug use over his entire period of incarceration, the numerous disciplinary infractions, and his escape conviction, not just disciplinary infraction for escape, but he was convicted of a felony for that escape. Based on all those factors, the Maricopa County Attorney's Office would oppose absolute discharge and parole to the next consecutive sentence because Mr. Camper has not earned the right to be paroled to his next consecutive sentence. Does anyone on the board have any questions?
Any questions for Mr. Elias? No, sir. Thank you. Okay, Mr. Camper, I'm going to come back around to you. Ms. Adams, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we go to Mr. Camper?
Were you speaking to me, Mr. Johnson? I wasn't sure I heard that.
Yes, ma'am. We're going to go.
Okay.
Coming up on the conclusion of
the hearing. Just a couple of things, just to correct for the record. Jeff has not been granted protective custody. He's been assaulted a couple of times, and he has essentially been left to fend for himself. So he has not been officially granted protective custody. In terms of his educational achievements versus his job assignments, Jeff has no control over that. His job assignments are completely at the discretion of the Department of Corrections. And so if he doesn't accept a job that he is assigned, he can receive a disciplinary write-up simply for refusing a direct order to work at that job. So he has to work at any job that he's assigned. And the reason, in part, that he hasn't worked at all during the time period listed is because he's been in and out of various 805 investigations at his own request to obtain protective custody. And while those investigations are being conducted, he's placed in a completely isolated situation of the Department of Corrections choice. So he has no opportunity to work when he's in that status. I would like to just respond to the fact that, you just heard mention of a person earning their way to parole, and I absolutely agree that a parole is something to be treasured, to be valued, and to be earned. But there's also people don't have linear paths to that earning. They take steps and then they fail, and then they go back and take another step forward, and they learn from their mistakes, and they continue to try and attempt to learn from their mistakes. And that is exactly the path that Jeff has taken. And again, along with earning the parole to a consecutive sentence is the fact that there is a situation of hope for this person, that he can be considered by the official body who will ultimately make all the decisions in the future about whether he is ever released. We are not a vengeful society. Our society is based on responsibility, punishment, retribution, etc. But it's not a vengeful punishment. And so to assume that he should never, ever, ever be paroled to his consecutive sentence, which has been expressed to you, that would mean that this board would make a decision to not even, it would be nonsensical if that were the decision for the board to even conduct any future parole hearings, because why bother? The decision would already have been made. So Jeff Camper deserves to come before you and have and maintain hope that he will be paroled to his consecutive sentence, which again does not engender or endanger any threat to the community or to anyone due to the consecutive sentences. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hamm. Mr. Campos, we're coming up on a conclusion of your hearing, sir. A couple of things. On the escape, what happened with the escape, sir, that you were later convicted of?
We ran off into the desert. There was no place to go, but we got 12 miles away from the prison, and they caught us and brought us back.
When you say many of you was it?
Just two.
Uh-huh. What was your plan when you got out, or just something that just happened?
Well, we thought we'd go to Mexico.
Okay. Senator, like I said, we're coming up on a conclusion of your hearing, Mr. Camper. Anything else that you'd like to say to this board before we go into discussion, sir?
Yes. I keep hearing that I made more than one statement in this process, and it's really not quite accurate. Well, it's not accurate, because the very first statement that was given that his mother is talking about a knife, that was a statement created by the homicide detectives. It was not a statement that I gave. There was a knife thrown in the truck, but it was not used to cut David with. The cut David received on the jaw was from a piece of aluminum that was wrapped around the handle of the hammer, because it cut me too. That's how the cut got there. It didn't have nothing to do with the knife. As far as my not working, yes, Donahan is right about what she's saying, but also I'm falling victim of what they call a priority ranking system, and where education and programs and jobs are concerned, they hand those out through a computer matrix now, and the people who are getting out of prison in a reasonable amount of time, they get the best jobs now, they get the best programming now, and if you have an LRA in your sentence, you're not allowed to have a maintenance job, you're not allowed to have a teacher's aide job no more, they don't like you to work in the kitchen no more. So, yes, I have been taking guard crew jobs and whatever they'll give me. So, that's not something that I was doing by choice, it's something that I was doing by necessity.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Camper. I'm going to see if the board has anything additional. Not seeing any comment coming for the board at this time. Mr. Camper, the board's going to go into discussion, sir. While the board's in discussion, we will make a determination whether to grant you parole to your next consecutive sentence or an absolute discharge. I'm going to ask you to remain on the phone so that you can hear the conversation taking place between the board. We will come back to you afterwards with the decision of the board, okay?
Yes.
The board is now going into discussion. We've had the opportunity to hear from the victim witness and victim advocates, as well as from the supporters of Mr. Camper, as well as the opportunity to speak with Mr. Camper himself. Based on the information that we actually have, I do want to commend and acknowledge that Mr. Camper has taken some programming, that he has obtained his AA since he's been incarcerated. He also says that he's received a certificate, was not impacted for building maintenance, computer repair, small business management. He states that the reason that he hasn't had a job is not that he's in, according to him and Ms. Hamm, it's not that he's NPC, but that he is going through a process that was there. He does have letters of support from his family. He does have family support that is actually here today, that's happening. According to his sister, she testified that Mr. Campbell was reliable, stable, and working individual. At the time that this incident occurred, when he moved out here to Arizona. I am very concerned about the prison record of Mr. Camper. This incident that occurred, and March of 17, possession of drug paraphernalia, which was a syringe, although Mr. Camper says he didn't use the syringe. He was inhaling it when he was actually doing the drugs while he was incarcerated. But during the entire time that he's been incarcerated, there's been tickets that he has received for the use of drugs. He was high and on methamphetamine at the time that this crime actually occurred. Although Mr. Camper says that he's been off drugs for about a year, that he has not used, he alleges that he has not used drugs since he's had this violation inside of the actual prison itself. However, because of his prison record and continued prison record and continued use of drugs and this ticket that he received in 2017, I have no idea whether, you know, it was his or not, although he stated it was not his, but he did, he was found guilty, and it was a major that he was incarcerated in, and it appears that while he's using drugs that he gets involved in these crimes. It was a violent crime that actually happened there, that it was there. I am just not comfortable with granting Mr. Campbell parole to his next and consecutive sentence, although he does have a good program and educational, but his continual use of drugs while being incarcerated is a problem, and this crime occurred while he was under the influence of drugs. That's my opinion at this time, but I'm willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues. Mr. Neal.
You go back to the crimes and it's being presented. I don't know, I don't get a sense of true remorse. It was an accident, but it was pushed way beyond an accident. If he had accidentally hit him in the head, that, according to the coroner, more likely that would have killed him anyway, about anything else. The story between what he told the pre-sentencing officer, I don't know what he said in court, but now there's a vast difference between how the gunshot went. And according to the coroner's report, it had to be this kind of a shot, not where he's laying down over there and shooting at an angle or an accidental discharge. And then, okay, drag the body out, put it in the truck to dispose of it. Okay. But stop the gas station and pour gas in and around and on the body. That always, in my mind, is pretty heinous. And I just don't hear the remorse when he talks about it. It's like, okay, it happened. I've gone drugs. Okay. But it was, you know, aren't you sorry for what you did? What, no matter why you did it, aren't you sorry that you took a human life? And it just doesn't ring true to me in that. It just, I don't know, I'm not comfortable with the idea of moving him to the next consecutive sentence. And I know we hear that we will give him some hope, but it doesn't give any hope to the victims. And even though he wouldn't be released, it totally excludes their feelings. But the fact that 5 months before his last parole, he was involved in something with drugs, and he says that he's been clean for a year. Well, that incident happened before he says it's clean. So there was a pattern of 29 years of in and out of drugs and everything. So I would not be comfortable with moving him anywhere closer to the door at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Brian, did you have anything? No, go ahead and make a motion.
No, I'll just say this, Honorable Mr. Johnson, is that this is my fourth time, I believe, listening to Mr. Campbell, and I think that one of the things I'll just point out, we have not had a consistent information provided to the board. I think that, and like you, I am concerned about his use of drugs, whether he is, that habit has not been, is not under control. We don't know what would happen if he was back out in society. I think that he's not ready at this particular time. this is one program, but that's my feeling, that I want to be objective and unbiased in terms of my thinking, but having listened to him, well, I believe four times, I'm just not convinced at this time, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. I. Therefore, I am going to go ahead and make a motion to deny Mr. Camper absolute discharge of parole to his next consecutive sentence.
Second.
Agree. Motion by myself, second by Mr. Neal. Agree. Dr. Wright, I am also going to ask for a one-year set-off, as this has been occurred in 1989.
Agree.
Agree. I'm going to mark the reasons for denial, that it was a serious and violent offense, that it was a loss of human life. I'm going to mark it as a serious demon offense since the victim was set on fire. I'm also going to mark trauma to the victim as the circumstances on how this incident actually occurred. I'm going to mark for poor institutional behavior, and I'm also going to mark recent disciplinary infractions since the last incident was in 2017. I'm not going to mark a poor no release plan or poor demeanor during the hearing, nor am I going to mark no family or community support, because he does have a family here that is supportive of him at this time, as well as representation. Those would be my reasons for denial, unless the board has some other things that they would like to add or subtract from it. Seeing no other things coming from the board. Mr. Camper?
Yes.
Sir, the board has voted to deny you absolute discharge or parole to your next consecutive sentence. Did you hear the reasons why, sir? Or would you like for me to go back over them again?
I kind of would like a brief review.
Okay.
I couldn't hear everything.
Okay, so the reasons for denial is that it was a serious and violent offense, loss of human life, a serious and deviant offense, trauma to the victim, poor institutional behavior, and recent disciplinary infractions since the last infraction was in 2017, sir. I also made the statement that I'm not going to mark anything about your release plan, poor demeanor during your hearing, because none of that is happening, that you do have family support and community support that you do have here today. So none of those things are being marked for reasons for denial, sir.
Okay.
All right. Is there any other questions, sir?
Not a question exactly. Could I explain the drug use a little bit? Is it too late for that?
No, sir. We've had the explanation on the actual drugs. We have concluded the hearing. We were just giving you the information as to why the board had made the decision that we've made today, sir. And you were able to hear the discussion taking place between the board. Mr. Camper, I do want to thank you for taking the time and opportunity to participate in this hearing today, sir. That is going to conclude your hearing at this time. Ms. Ham, Ms. Candace Roth, along with Ms. Carl Roth, we're going to conclude the hearing. We will be hanging up and disconnecting the phone at this time. I want to thank all of those that are here in the boardroom today, and thank you for your time and opportunity to come down and make your presentations here before the board. That is going to conclude the hearing at this time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just for information, the victims and the state exit this door. Supporters, would you exit that door? Thank you.
Okay.